worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org.
I'm here with storyteller and scholar of mythology, Michael Mead, and his newest book is Awakening the Soul, A Deep Response to a Troubled World. And Michael, you bring in lots of wonderful folk tales and stories within this book, and I'm just stimulated and excited by each one because they just give me another view. And one of them is called the 60 Canyon Abandonment. So help us understand, what is that folktale?
So in the name of the chapter, I think, is Turning Things Around. So I think we're in the Turning Things Around moment. It's an extended moment. We can't keep going down collectively down the path we're going. We have to turn things around. And so I found this story.
Because we're heading over the cliff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, whether you're looking at, you know, the use of oil and nature, or over the cliff with the loss of integrity and culture.
Yes.
And so I found this story from Japan. There's more than one version. But anyway, in this case, the 60 canyons didn't mean that there were 60 canyons. It meant that when you turned 60, you had to walk out into the canyons and abandon your life and die in the canyons. And the realm was being ruled by a warlord. And so the people came to think the only things that were important were production and the next war. And the people, as they got older, weren't as productive or inclined to war. And so they had to leave. And so then there's one man in this case, turns 60, tells his son and daughter who live with him, they're like a grown son and daughter because he's older, and that he's going to go. And they said, well, we don't want you to go alone. We're going with you. So they all head out on the trails to abandonment. And then the son and daughter notice he's taking the tips of evergreen trees and throwing the tips behind them. And they said, oh, we know what you're trying to do. You're trying to mark the path back. And after we leave, you're going to go back. And he said, no. I've agreed to this. And my life is close to being over anyway. If I die, it's not the greatest loss, but you're young. And to not have your lives become fulfilled would be a tremendous loss. And so I'm marking the path so you don't get lost. So this is the turning point. They have stopped and they're having a discussion about being abandoned and being lost. And the elders and the youth actually both suffer that in culture. And they have a moment of realization. The Greek word is metanoia, a deep turning back towards truth. And so they said, well, we can't abandon you. And he says, I don't want to abandon you. So they all go back together. And now they're back in the culture, in the village, living, simple place. But he can't be seen because he's become an outlaw, which is, and I talk in that chapter about how elders are outlaws, or they're serving a greater law than the common law. And often the common law isn't serving the common good. And so sometimes people, you know, you want to have a culture of law, as they say, but you want to have a culture of wise laws. And this one wasn't wise. Now he's living under the house and they...
So he's hiding out.
He's hiding out, but deeper down. Living below the village as if he's in touch with deeper roots and deeper understanding. He's literally in the place of understanding everyone. And
standing under, yeah. Understanding,
yeah.
Yes.
And that's what the elders are. And so then the ruler gives all these things everybody has to do or else their taxes are going up, whatever it is. And they're all mythological things, quite complicated in the book.
They're impossible tasks.
Tasks.
Yes.
And then I say we're living in the time of impossible tasks and we have to tap into the deep understanding of the human soul, one image of which is the wise elder, not the older. He's become the elder now, because he's kind of refusing to die in a way that isn't meaningful. And but as soon as the elders awaken, they're naturally connected to the youth who are looking for the great dream and the imagination of the future. So the son and daughter are coming back and saying, well, now they are requiring us to do this and no one knows how to do it. And if we don't do it, we all get, you know, sanctions and punishments. And then the old man under the house says, well, here's what you do. And he shows them how to do it. And this, of course, has to happen three times because it's a mythological story. So then the ruler eventually says, each time I do this, you two are the only only two that can figure this out, and you're young. How can you be so wise when you're young? And they can't help it. They have to tell the truth. And they say, well, we're getting it from our father. And the question is, how old is he? Well, he's over 60. Well, why isn't he abandoned? And they say, because we love him and we couldn't abandon him. And the ruler begins to think about it and how much wisdom there is in this one elder that they happen to have at that time. And he, for some reason, says, okay, maybe this isn't the greatest law. And then eventually they get rid of that law and they replace it with the idea that you celebrate the elders because of their wisdom and deep understanding and connection to both nature and the sacred things in life. And so I call that turning things around. And I'm trying to say we're in that moment if we but see it. Where the youth and the elders working together can turn things around, that the combination of those two is what creates wisdom.
And okay, and I'm thinking, all right, so the elder, he's an elder, not an older.
Yes.
An older doesn't necessarily, just because they've lived a long life, have wisdom, but that person who has tapped into that deep well of wisdom.
Yeah.
Is a true elder.
Yeah.
And becomes a mentor to these young people.
Yeah.
And it just reminds me that you state at some point that none of us really can be a mentor unless we have experienced being mentored ourselves.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking of a time, and I think you've mentioned this on previous programs, but it's such a beautiful story, where you were mentored as a very young fellow. I think, I don't know, maybe fifth grade, I don't remember which you, but you were in school and there was a young nun.
Yeah.
And she did a blessing of your soul.
Yeah, yeah.
And it somehow, that might have been one of the early mentorings that you experienced.
Yeah.
So I'd love for you to share a little bit of that.
Yeah, that's in this book.
Yes.
And I use a Native American story of an orphaned, a deaf orphan, it's hard to say, who wakes up out of longing and then gets blessed by an elder. And then when I was carrying that story around, I was wondering, why am I carrying this story all the time? And then I realized that when I was about 10, I had entered this new school. The family moved, and I was a puzzle to the people in the school because I had the highest grades and the worst behavior. And so we used to get, it was Catholic school, we get report cards, which include all the grades, including a grade for behavior. And so I had straight A's and F for behavior. And so then you were ranked the way you sat by your grades. And so the best seat was the one closest to the teacher. That would be the highest one. And the worst seat was the one way at the back. And I had been put way at the back because of behavior. And then the teacher came in and she said, well, we have a problem. The class, we have a problem. And our problem is Michael, who by his behavior gets the last seat, by his grades gets the first seat. And I've been told to punish him for the bad behavior. And she started to cry. And she said, I can't do it. I have three brothers, and I miss them so much. I live pretty isolated in the convent here, and I don't see my family. I miss my brothers who I love, and how could I hurt him? It would be like hurting my brothers. And she just started crying. And then as she got further into this, she pulled her whole habit off, the whole top part of the habit, and her hair was cut very short, and she said, here's how I live, with my hair, you know, removed, with no one to talk to. There's no one that gives me advice really in a meaningful way, and no one hears my pain, and I'm not about to cause pain to any of you students, and certainly, you know, not to him. So we all have to do something now, and instead of punishing him, I want him to move from the back seat to the front seat, and I want everybody to support it, because we want Michael to be a leader for the good, not for the bad. And so it was this weird moment, you know, I'm like 10 years old or whatever, and I don't understand it.
But the seed of that was at least saying, I have a choice. I can go down this path of the bad boy, or I can be a leader for good. I mean, that's a powerful moment.
Well, and what made it powerful was her telling her own inner truth and bearing her soul and bearing her pain and crying out of deep compassion for
unheard of in a Catholic school. I mean, I know to have a nun take off her headdress and cry, even a teacher crying and revealing that genuine story, being authentic.
Yeah. And out of compassion. And so then I have to move literally from the back, and I go walk, have to walk past her to get to the seat. And I realized later, I didn't understand that I felt something, but I didn't know what it was. And later I realized it was a blessing. I was being seen with those eyes and the full attention of someone else's soul that blesses. And that's the essence of mentoring, is to bless the soul, bless the giftedness of a younger person, although age eventually doesn't have anything to do with it. Anybody can mentor. The younger can mentor the old.
Yes, that it can actually go both ways.
Well, that's what the turnaround in the story is. The young one said, we're not going to abandon you, and that turns things around. And so then I carried this blessing without understanding it, and I was carrying this story about this orphan boy that was deaf in this tribe, and I finally realized the reason I'm carrying the story is because there's an orphan part of me that was the kid that was sitting at the back acting out for whatever number of reasons, and that he was seen by that teacher in a most compassionate way, and now I need to see that in myself better. So psychologically, everybody has orphan parts that have been put away and basically abandoned because the family didn't want them or this community or the society didn't want them. And to grow a greater, deeper soul means to recover the orphans inside ourselves.
And it takes a while to really truly understand that. I mean, it's actually guiding our lives without a rational understanding. Yeah. And I can just think in my own life, I was asked to be with a group and be a keynote speaker, and they said, please talk about a turning point in your life.
Yeah.
And the oddest thing happened for me, and I found myself telling a story to this group of people I had never told before, and it was about myself when I was about 10 years old. Mm. And as I told this story, I realized that was the first time in my memory that soul calling, that destiny of who I am came out of me spontaneously and courageously without any rational reason.
Yes.
So we may not know the wherewithals until much later, but these moments are turning points.
And they're indelible in the soul, and they continue to live. When I tell that story, or when I wrote it down, which is the first time I ever wrote it down for the book, I feel the blessing from that young, holy woman who was surpassing the whole credo around her because of her compassion and breaking all the rules the way the elder has to do in the story, along with the youth, not to break the rules in rebellion, but to get to the greater laws, the laws of humanity and the laws, the universal law of compassion and empathy.
I'm here with Michael Mead, author of Awakening the Soul, A Deep Response to a Troubled World. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with Michael Mead, storyteller and translator of mythology and the author of Awakening the Soul, A Deep Response to a Troubled World. His website, to know more about him and his podcast, his all of his activities and his mini books, go to mosaicvoices.org, mosaicvoices.org, or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. Michael, I would love, here's another myth, and this book is so rich. So this is the myth of Ur, E-R, and it's all about the descent into the underworld. And in that whole descent, which is just so lovely that you've pulled, I know it's a huge myth, but you've pulled the essence of the story that speaks so deeply to me about that whole descent and especially the part when he meets the goddess called Clotho. And please help us understand a bit about this myth and what it means to us in our lives.
So the background is descent to the soul rather than arising to the spirit. They're both important, but the descent to the soul is the thing that's missing now. I call this the lost story of Western imagination because it's been lost. People don't know it. And so it starts with the legend of a soldier who's in a battle, and he appears to die, and he's under a pile of corpses, but he doesn't die. And instead, he's taken into the underworld. And in the underworld, he joins a group of people who are actually souls on their way to being born. And so he travels through the underworld, the territory of the unconscious, if you want to think about it psychologically. And two amazing things happen, two core things. One is they wind up at the center of the cosmos, and they see the spinning of the cosmos. And so why that's important, it says each of our souls, before they came to life, were at the center of the cosmos. So the individual soul is connected to the center of the cosmos, or the soul of the world, the universe, whatever. So that's one part. And then the second part is right after they're at the center of the cosmos, they come upon the three sisters of fate. And the three sisters of fate are the ones who are occasionally giving the cosmos to spin. And then they're the ones who give each of the souls their individual thread. And Clotho gives them the thread and then pulls it and gives it a twist so that each person's life has a twist in it, which makes their life unique, and it's called a twist of fate. And then the idea of a person, for a person, is to live deeply enough to find that twist of fate. And as soon as a person becomes aware of the unique twist in their life, now they're aimed at their destiny. Fate leads to destiny. So he goes through the whole thing, and then the souls each have their thread. And then they enter the plane of oblivion, which leads to the river Lethe, which is called the river of forgetfulness. And that's important because the mythological idea is each of our souls were at the center of the cosmos before we were born. Each of our souls has a thread, which is our fate and our destiny. I call it the genius thread. And then each of us forgot because we drank the waters of forgetfulness, and then we were born. In the story, it says, and then the souls, after they drank the forgetfulness so that none of them could remember what they had seen and what their individual thread was, except for Ur, who is like Earth, who represents everyone, and he was told not to drink the water. So then the souls are all born like comets, like shooting stars onto the earth, but they've forgotten why they came, except for Ur, who wakes up on his own funeral pyre with the knowledge that each soul comes from the center of the cosmos, and each has its own thread of fate and of destiny, and he becomes the person delivering the message to the common world that this is where we come from, and we're all aimed at something meaningful. And then the story has been turned into a discussion of philosophy, and I call it the lost story because it's really the story of the origin of the soul. And the river Lethe is the river of forgetfulness, and the Greek word for truth is aletheia, not to forget.
Not to forget. So why is it important for us if we take this story and say, we each have this thread of genius that we're born with, that we're not empty vessels coming in,
yes.
that there's more to it than that, that yep. there's a depth to us. Why is it important for us to tune into that, and how can we do that?
So the two parts, the way they work for me, is the idea that we're at the center of the cosmos before we were born. You could translate it, that into Carl Jung's deep self. We're at the center of origin of life, and we still carry that inside us. We've just forgotten it. So that's one thing. When everything gets scary and shaky and sad and tragic, remember that we're connected to the very source of life, the origins and the center of the cosmos, or the deep self, because that steadies the psyche and makes us, you know, less afraid. And then that each of us is pulling a thread, again, I call it the genius thread, into the world. Once we awaken to it, that thread is our connection to our giftedness, that the idea being the ancient idea that each soul comes into the world with gifts to give to the world.
But you say, once we are awakened to it, now that's the, like, the fulcrum right there. How do we awaken to that?
So the two ways of talking about it is the old idea of an initiation or rites of passage. Each girl, each boy wouldn't just go to high school. They would go to low school. They would go to deep school. They would go to soul school. And they would go down and find out who they were in the depth of themselves. And each person, after being born on Earth, having forgotten why they came, is supposed to be reborn psychologically and imaginatively to who they are at the core of themselves. Huge issue in the Western world. The argument, are we empty? Do we have souls, or are we just empty vessels?
Okay, all right. What I'm getting, and I'm getting this from your book too, here. So at this point, this needing the initiation, it's like we approach it, coming to the initiation, as a seed. And we know seeds, let's say the walnut, it's a very hard seed.
Yeah.
So the seed has to be broken open,
yes,
in order to germinate and to then grow.
Yes.
So it's that breaking open. Somehow that's sometimes painful.
Birth is painful, the poets used to say. To be born here, someone had to go through labor pains for us to get here. The second time we go through the labor pains and give birth to ourselves from ourselves, one of the meanings of initiation is revealing oneself to oneself. And so, yeah, the shell has to crack. One way psychologically to imagine that shell is the shell of narcissism that has to crack. And we can see right now in this culture how important that would be. If those who are in power could crack the shell of their own narcissism, they might feel the natural empathy for the suffering of other people. But anyway, that's their business. Ours is to crack our own shell. And so then once a person realizes that we're not empty inside, we have pain in there, but we have hidden gifts in there, like we were talking about with the golden repair, and the satisfaction of one's life and one's soul comes from giving one's gifts to the world. And right now the world, whether it's the world of nature, the world of culture, is just, you know, everywhere you look, there's damage, there's healing that's needed, there are answers and solutions that are needed, whether it's to poverty and oppression, or it's to the pollution of rivers and the pollution of forests. And each person is born with their thread, which would allow them to give something of a healing nature or a growing nature. Some people are born to be scientists, and some people are born to be death doulas, and some people are born to figure out how to take pollution out of rivers. And so what I'm saying, if everybody just could live their thread, then one day a person following their thread winds up at an intersection where something is desperately needed. They don't have to be heroic. They don't have to claim they're going to save everybody. They just have to bring the truth of their own life and the gifts of their own soul, and they're in an intersection where that can have a meaningful weight in shifting the world from destruction to creation, from chaos to imagination. And we're always at that point now. We're living in that, the Greeks called it the kairos, the place of collapse and renewal. That's what we're going through. And our best chance is to go through life allowing ourselves to be pulled by our own thread. And someone once stood up in the audience and said, well, how can you prove that that's going to help? And I said, well, here's the way I'm looking at it. If I follow the thread of my life and the world becomes more creative and I can have a little contribution to that, then I will die, with an unburdened soul. And if I'm following the thread of my life and everything keeps falling apart and that's the way it goes, but I've followed my thread, I can die with an unburdened soul. Either way, the thing to do in life, as I was saying about the Hamlet, it's not, you know, it's not the simple question of living and dying, to be myself or else to not be. We're only ourselves when we're living our lives. And that's why I end the book with living in truth, the individual truth, and the idea that that could generate a collective initiation without anybody having to be a big heroic figure. And when you don't have that idea that heroically we're going to save the world, you start to see the importance of each individual person because they each can bring some healing in their own unique way. And even the West has a story about that. It just has been forgotten.
Wow. Yeah, this is just a mouthful. And you're saying that it is enough for us to act out through our own gifts and contribute those and know that that is enough and it will be used in good ways.
Yeah. Because often people think that the giftedness has to be this big, bright thing. And then you find out that some people have the gift of empathy and they are essential to everybody else feeling connected to their own story.
Thank you so much for being with us today, Michael. I've been speaking with Michael Mead. He's a storyteller, a scholar of mythology, and the author of Awakening the Soul, A Deep Response to a Troubled World. And to know more about his work, you can go to his website, mosaicvoices.org, mosaicvoices.org. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You've been listening to New Dimensions. This is program number 3652.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You, too, can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the Donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. For over four decades, New Dimensions has been producing weekly conversations at the leading edge. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard, to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our New Dimensions and New Dimensions Cafe podcasts, and to access thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org, or call us at 707-468-5215. That's 707-468-5215. Please join us next time as we explore New Dimensions. New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. Each week, New Dimensions explores the social, political, scientific, environmental, and spiritual frontiers with some of today's foremost social innovators, thinkers, scientists, and creative artists.
Hello, I'm Valerie Andrews, the author of Sanctuary. Next time on New Dimensions, I'll be talking about home as an antidote to the speed and stress of modern life.
Are you curious about the latest news in Canadian politics, labor, environment, feminism, and activism? Tune in to Rabble Radio on CJSF 90.1 FM to hear the latest news and stories that matter to you. Rabble Radio is the flagship podcast of Rabble.ca.
You're listening to